Welcome back.
Thank you.
Appreciate your interest in the University of Minnesota Board of Regents and for joining us today. You know how this process goes. We'll turn it back to you for some opening comments on why you're interested in serving on the Board of Regents. We will then fire off a range of questions, a lightning round. It's not really that. No, not really that until we get to that. And then we'll turn it back to you for any closing comments, hopefully all within 45 minutes. Sure. So, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, and thanks to all of you for your service on this commission. It's terrific that you're taking this kind of time, and I know that it's a lot of time. My name is Bill Luther. I'm married. My wife is Janet Robert. I have two children, Alex and Alicia, whose mother, Darlene, was actually a Minnesota legislator for 10 years. She passed away 17 years ago. I grew up on a dairy farm near Fergus Falls, Minnesota. Representative Nornes can tell you that we're proud of Fergus Falls. I don't see him here, but we're proud of Fergus Falls getting international recognition these days because of the publicity in the German newspaper. So it's been quite a topic of discussion back in my hometown. But it's where my parents taught me probably the most important message that you could ever get as a child, which is that with hard work and sacrifice, you could grow up to be anything that you wanted to be in this country. But I believe we would have never succeeded in life without the opportunity to attend the University of Minnesota. It was paid for by milking the cows on the farm and raising crops to sell. There, I received both of my degrees, my Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering and my JD degree from the law school. My sister and brothers received their undergraduate degrees, their law and medical degrees as well. So in our small family, we received 7 degrees in total from the University of Minnesota. After clerking for the federal court and practicing business law in Minneapolis, I went into public service with a deep appreciation for what the University of Minnesota had meant to our family, providing us with opportunities that my parents never had, quite frankly. I had the privilege of serving in the Minnesota legislature for 20 years, over a decade as the Senate Assistant Majority Leader, and chairing conference committees on the state budget. I also served on the board of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, helping to build youth sports facilities from the ground up around the state. I then served 8 years in the United States Congress in Washington, where I worked across party lines, especially with Congressman Jim Ramstead, since Jim and I both shared the suburbs of Minneapolis-St. Paul in our districts. In the past 16 years since leaving public office, I've worked in a broad range of business activities, from telecom, from helping businesses with the line items in their budgets, and with mediating business disputes and conflicts. I've handled fiduciary responsibilities to high standards learned from my days at the Dorsey Law Firm in Minneapolis. I've worked on budgets where I could apply my U of M accounting education. And in Congress, of course, back then, many of us worked in a bipartisan basis for a balanced budget for our country. I have supported equity, diversity, and inclusion throughout my life, with minority councils that I supported when I served in the legislature. My constant refrain always being the best social service program in the world is a job. And I also was one of the first members of the Council on the Economic Status of Women in the early years, when there weren't many men on that council, but I knew that that was a significant issue that we needed to deal with. So I think it was in the second or third period of that council. I joined it for 2 terms. And a priority of my work in Congress was microcredit loans to people in unimaginable poverty in the poorest parts of the world, because it gave them hope, just like we thrive on hope. It gave them hope for a better life for them and their family. Back home, I built a diverse staff on my my congressional staff, and I conducted college seminars around my district, so that I was coming to the people explaining the college opportunities rather than them waiting to come to call for us in the office. My approach has always been collaborative consensus building, both in public office and in business and mediation. Practically all of my work was not mine alone. It was rather a team effort, and at times working with CEOs and their boards. I don't think it's any one of my experiences that would be most helpful serving on the board, but I feel that my broad experience might be unique to the applicants that you have, and I'd like it to benefit the university at this point in my life. I also believe good governance requires a team to have vision and to take on difficult issues before problems arise. That's why, just one example, again, working with other members of Congress, I initiated the bipartisan GAO study of rising college tuition costs 20 years ago, before it was a hot topic for everyone in this country. Which brings me to why I'd like to serve as a regent. I'm not interested in resume building or having something to do. I simply want to give back to the university that has given so much to me, my family, and to the people of our state. Our state is filled with families just like ours, which is why every opportunity I've had in my life, I've worked for access and affordability, regardless of background, status, or, as they say, zip code. I come with both a rural and metro perspective. I stay in close contact with our farm, with the people from my hometown and in greater Minnesota. And I have a concern for all areas of education, whether it's engineering, agriculture, healthcare, or the arts. At the end of my term, I think I'll feel successful if we've made progress on access and affordability while building on the excellence at the U. I'll feel successful if the U has less drama and more positive news, to be frank. And if I can help in just a small way to make the university even greater for the people of Minnesota, I will feel successful. Thanks, and I'll be glad to try to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I will start with the first question, which is about the University of Minnesota's land grant mission. The University of Minnesota is our state's land-grant university. What does that mean to you, and what do you think it should mean to the people of Minnesota?
Well, it's a unique status. It differentiates the University of Minnesota from all other colleges. It was very visionary when that land-grant program was set up. I think it was during the Reconstruction period in this country. And it was set up with three mandates being education, research, and community involvement or outreach. And it was visionary because it didn't have a one-size-fits-all coming from the federal government. It basically said to the states, you set this up and you involve your own people of the state and you do the research that's important for that state. And it's been a great success. It's built out our economy throughout the country. And I think we have to be mindful of it all the time. We have to make sure that, for example, particularly the outreach, that we're making this a greater, a whole state strategy, so that it's not just viewed as a metro university. But in my work, I've been asked so many times why Minnesota is special. I get that a lot, whether in Washington or other parts of the country. You know, why is it you have all these Fortune 500 companies? Why do you have such a feeling of community? Why do people love the place? And you can have, of course, a whole list of reasons for that. But I'll tell you, at the top of that reason, based on the studies I've seen, the experts I've talked to, it's the University of Minnesota. And everything that has spun off from the University of Minnesota is what then builds on making our state as special as it is. So I think we need to cherish that, and we need to build on it and preserve it for the future. Thank you.
Councilmember Menon.
Thank you, and thank you for your service, Congressman, and thank you for being here today. My question relates to the issue of crisis management. You did mention in your opening statement that you'd like to see less drama from the university and you'd like to see more positive news. So what do you believe are the core approaches to crisis management, and how would you bring that to a collaborative initiative like the Board of Regents?
Well, that's a very good question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Crisis management, of course, we've all been through crises in our life, different kinds than the kinds that the university has faced. I mean, I've served in government long enough to be through shutdowns and 9/11 and, you know, security briefings on problems around the world. But just what you're talking about is just kind of on a day-to-day crisis situation. Number one, you need a plan, and you need a well-thought-out plan. So often, the response to the crisis becomes a bigger problem than the crisis itself. That happens all the time, and we have to make sure that that doesn't occur. Then you need to execute the plan and have an excellent spokesperson that everybody can be behind. But in the process of doing that, I think you need honesty, candor. You need to involve. You need to involve the entire border regions. You have to have everyone feel like they've got a piece of it. And I think if you handle it right, I think, and then have excellent press relations, so that the press learns that you're not keeping things private and secret from them, but you're giving them a consistent the facts consistently. I think you can. You know, people will buy in, and people will be on board. And I think it's that kind of consistency: establishing a plan, building on that plan, and then having one spokesperson be the spokesperson for the university, but having great credibility with the press and with the public, because they're telling the truth and they've got transparency and they're doing the right job. That is the approach I would use, I think, which is very similar to what you see out in the corporate world today. And you see some failings of it, but when it's done well, you see the results of that too.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Taylor.
Thanks again for being here this morning, fellow City of Minnetonka neighbor. you mentioned looking ahead 6 years, if you were successful in becoming a regent, that you would feel that you had been effective if you'd made a positive impact on access and affordability. Tell us a little bit about some specific metrics or measures that you would have in mind that would tell you that you had done a good job.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I think holding the line on tuition increases, if at all possible, is just a key to that. When we talk about the disadvantaged people in society, minorities and women and students that are the non-traditional students, one of the biggest obstacles to them, of course, is the student debt and the tuition levels. And so I really believe that we need to look at ways to create new revenue, some ideas in that regard, some ways to get greater efficiencies, some ways to present a better image to the Minnesota legislature so that we get as much assistance as we can by showing them the other things that we're doing. They're not going to fund us if it looks like we're not making an effort across the board. And we ought to do as many things as we can to make the budget work without imposing it on students. You know, there's that old rule that if you find yourself in a hole, the best thing to do is to stop digging. And I think that applies. When you've got tuition at the level that it's at, we ought to do everything we can to deal with that. And that's one of the reasons I did the GAO study. I know it's been followed up by the GAO as well since then. But it's a problem, and it affects the less advantaged in our society. Thank you.
Councilmember Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and welcome, Candidate Luther. Or can I say, Bill, we've been in the habit of disclosing relationships, and I go back 50 years with Bill Luther. He was a law student at law school when I was. It'll be my 50th reunion this spring. It'll be his next spring. So we're together at law school. He was a cum laude, me not so much. He went with the very best law firm at the time, Dorsey Whitney, so well, and your resume, and thank you for this one-pager, it gives us a much better and quicker look at your distinguished career. I have one interesting question, though. University of Minnesota, 1967, electrical engineering major, then to law school. What's the transition?
Well, that's a good question. I'll have to dig back in my memory. But when I,
Mr. Chair and members,
when I grew up on the farm, you know, we didn't have a lot of contact with the outside world. And it was when the Russians were shooting Sputnik up and our country was in a panic. And
so every high school counselor, if you could,
I always said if you could add two and two and get four, they sent you to the Institute of Technology, if possible, at the university. Once I got to the university, and I appreciated that very much, but once I got to the university, I realized that I was interested in my econ class and my, you know, my philosophy classes and my political science classes. And so I remember going over to the law school when I was, I think, a sophomore and saying, you know, I think I want to get into law school. I really like some of the non-technical things. And the dean was kind enough to meet with me and said, well, just keep doing what you're doing, because we find that some of our best students are the students that come through the what was then the Institute of Technology, because they're disciplined, they use logic. You know, he gave me all the reasons. And he said, then come over here when you're in your final year and apply for law school. I just followed his advice. That's what happened. And that's why I went to law school. Sometimes politically I used to joke and say I got lost on campus one day and ended up in law school. Because, of course, engineers are always viewed more positively than lawyers. So, but that's the story.
Councilmember Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Congressman Luther, for being here. When I listened to your opening statement, I was thinking that if this doesn't work out, maybe you can go back to Congress. we need some of your opinion or your approach there. My question has to do with our professional schools. As you know, I'm a physician. I'm a graduate of the medical school, and the medical school produces 80% of the practicing physicians in the state. It's a huge portion of, or at least the health sciences are a huge portion of the university's budget. And yet, over the last couple of decades, the rankings of our medical school has continued to rate much lower than it did that period of time ago. We were consistently in the top 10 in the country if we go back the, 20, 30 years ago, and now it's in the mid-30s at best, and of course depending on which people you look at as far as ratings. And I'd be interested in your views and what things can be done to improve the ratings of specifically medical school or any other professional schools in the same vein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I've had the same concern about the medical school that you have. I think it's gone from a rating of 10 to maybe 40, or something like that. My sister, like you, was a graduate of the University of Minnesota Medical School. Family was very, very proud of her for doing that. I think there's some encouraging signs lately. We have a new dean, of course, as you know. In addition to that, within the last year, they have renegotiated the agreement with Fairview. It was not being properly enforced or reviewed, monitored, whatever. And the new agreement, from what I understand, gives a lot more opportunities for the university, more money and more opportunities. And now it's going to have to be monitored so that we have options ahead of us in the event that there isn't compliance with that agreement. So I think we could be headed in a positive direction in a short period of time. We'll have to watch it carefully and see. In terms of other things we could do, of course, I'm always concerned about the amount of debt that our professional students carry out of the University of Minnesota. Law, medicine, and our other professional schools. I mean, when you start getting up to $150,000 to $200,000 worth of debt, this can be a real problem for people as they pursue their careers, and I think especially as they get jobs in greater Minnesota. So I think And I should just comment on the law school for a moment. The law school now is, of course, running a deficit and drawing on the resources of the University of Minnesota because they're trying to maintain their standards by holding the line on the number of students that come to the law school. I hope that they look at other options other than that, because I don't like to see underutilization of our facilities at the University of Minnesota. If we have classrooms available, I'd like to see students in those classrooms rather than artificial restraints being placed in order to maintain that position. So I'm hoping that there are other options other than just limiting our enrollment. Thank you.
Councilmember Carlson.
Yes, in looking at your application, we see the last entry that you made was in 2003. What have been your major governance activities in the last 15 years, and can you relate any of them specifically to the University of Minnesota?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, Member Carlson. I would say it's basically been consulting is what I have done since leaving Congress. Mediation, where I work with businesses on resolving disputes short of litigation, which of course builds on the kind of work I did in terms of consensus building and dispute resolution that I did when I served in public office. I've worked extensively in the area of telecom, and telecom, of course, has great potential for the University of Minnesota. Our telecom research and technology could be to Minnesota like oil is to Texas. It's something that I would like to, of course, assist them on if I'm serving on a Board of Regents. I have, beyond that, just worked with various businesses. I worked heavily with the retailers on the whole dispute that they had with the credit card industry, the banks and the credit card industry. So I think any of the work that I have done since leaving Congress has furthered my basic approach to things, which is listening to people, respecting people, developing consensus, showing leadership, resolving problems, always teamwork. It's been what I've done throughout my life. I've always liked the motto. It says it's amazing the things you can get done when you don't need to take credit for things. And so that I think is very, I think the last number of years I have built on the work that I have had done prior to that.
Councilmember Brady.
Thank you for being here today, Congressman. I understand President Kaler was in St. Paul yesterday stumping for perhaps the last time, asking for an allocation of about $87 million incremental over past years for the operating budget, a couple hundred million, give or take a little bit, for capital projects, and proposing that would result in a 2% increase in the tuition for the average student. My understanding is that the operating budget, about 17%, comes from the legislature, which is down considerably from past years. Your observations, if you would, please, as to what the University of Minnesota and all of its stakeholders are doing well with respect to the Minnesota legislature in getting appropriations, and what they're not doing well and how they could improve on it.
Mr. Chairman, members. Well, it's a great question because it's the last few sessions of the legislature, of course, we've seen the Minnesota State program do better, basically, than the University of Minnesota. So we know that there are some public relations issues with the university. I think some of the drama I referred to earlier, I'm sure, comes into play. And I think when they see anything that they what appears to them to be abusive, not watching taxpayers' money closely enough, when you hear criticism, when you talk to legislators, that all factors in when it comes to the final decision of the budget committees. And I remember how that worked well. I used to be in those groups in the legislature, both here and the work I did in Washington. But when you make decisions, it's being made a lot of times based on the perception, the perceptions of the participants in making those decisions. And that's why we need to improve both the reality and the perception of how the legislature views the university. In addition to that, I think it would be good to have some ambassadors from the Board of Regents working with the administration. Obviously, the administration sets the strategy, but I assume that they would call on both Representative Spigum on the Board of Regents and myself to assist them working with the legislature to have a positive result. So I would look forward to offering my services if, as long as it fits in with their strategy, what they want to do, I would offer my services to try to increase that support. And I would try to provide the same kind of honest, trustworthy advice to them that I think we should have always on the Board of Regents, so that you develop credibility and trust. And that's how you get in positions of leadership. That's how you get in positions of leadership in the legislature, by being someone that people can trust, who's forthright, who listens, who's willing to put other people's interests in place of their own. Those are the kinds of things the university needs to do when it's dealing with the legislature. And I'd like to see those relationships improve a lot over where they've been in recent years.
Councilmember Wakefield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Candidate Luther, for being here today and for your dedication to the university. My question pertains to mental health. I work in a small private practice here in Minnesota, and one of the things we know about students as they transition to college life, that can be a difficult, stressful time for them. I'm wondering what you see as the role of the Regent Board in supporting the mental health needs of students.
Mr. Chairman, members, Member Wakefield, we need to recognize how significant this issue is. I've seen the same, not probably all the statistics you have, but I've seen the incredible increase of mental health issues, at least those that are now disclosed in surveys or polling or whatever. I'm sure there were probably a lot of issues in the past that didn't get the kind of attention that they do today. But I've seen those numbers, and it's very, very concerning. So the Board of Regents is going to have to be supportive of the administration, I believe, when the administration develops plans to increase our efforts in the area of mental health. And I believe that's in the works. And we have to recognize how important that is and how tragic it is not to be addressing the mental health needs of the students. I would just say that I would be very understanding of that, the mental health point of view and the needs for help in that area.
Chair, can I just tag on?
Sure.
To add that a little further, other than just the students, university also was a provider of services for citizens of the state. And then that there's a critical need for mental health services within the entire state. So your opinion about how the university can improve that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, thank you for adding that on, because because of the university and the great resources we have a lot of opportunities, especially, as I mentioned, on a statewide basis to provide assistance that you won't get from Mayo, you won't get from HCMC. They play important roles, but the university can play roles way beyond that. We have the campuses, we have the wherewithal, we have the mission to do that. And so I would obviously support using the resources we have to provide that kind of outreach and that kind of assistance to the whole state. I don't know the details of exactly what those things would be, the things we could provide. I'd have to rely on experts to assist on that, but that would be a terrific way for the university to fulfill its statewide mission both in the area of education and in outreach.
Councilmember Moore.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Congressman Luther, for being here and for your interest and service. You've mentioned diversity and inclusion in your opening statement, and also you've hearkened on it a little bit in some questions earlier. Minnesota is one of the worst states in terms of racial equality. What do you feel is the role of the university in building a more equitable landscape, not only for students, but for our state in general?
Mr. Chairman, members, I would say it. The first thing about the role is to set the right example. The University of Minnesota should be the leader in how we deal with diversity and inclusion in our society. And every person you get here is going to say, they're for diversity and inclusion, we should do these things. So I think the only thing I can really tell you is how what I have done in my career when it comes to diversity and inclusion. I mentioned some of them. One of the first members of the Council on the Economic Status of Women. I supported strongly the minority councils. I worked on those kinds of issues when I was in Congress with the poorest people in the world. I built a diverse staff. For most of my time, my Minnesota director was a woman. I hired biracial members of my staff in Washington. In fact, one that stands out is I hired a person right out of the University of Minnesota to be on my staff in Washington about 6 years, something like that, after he left my staff because I was no longer a member of Congress. He called me one day and he said, Bill, I wanted to thank you. And I said, what's this about? He said, I'm the deputy press secretary of the President of the United States, and I just held my first press conference on my own for the President of the United States, and had you not given me that start right out of the University of Minnesota, I wouldn't be here today. Now, to his credit, he called me 10 minutes after his press conference to tell me that. And that's what I tried to do in my own past. And to me, a person's track record on that is much more important than coming here and saying, I'm for this. I have a proven track record of working with people to give them opportunities. And I want to see the university better reflect the face of the state of Minnesota, population of the state of Minnesota. And I want us to be a leader. We should be the leader.
Councilmember Hipsch.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Congressman Luther, for joining us today. In the state of Minnesota, we have two major systems of public higher education, in the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota State System, as well as private college systems and others. What's the role of regions to work with their counterparts in those other organizations to really help frame a vision for higher education in the state?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. There was a time when we built out our system of education. I think many, many years ago, we had kind of a rule that, you know, within any kind of population center, we should have education facilities within 30, 40 miles or something like that. So as a result of that, we built out an extensive higher ed system. I think Minnesota State has about 32 facilities. We have our campuses, then we have the private colleges in addition to that. I think it would be, first of all, I think there should be increased cooperation. They have different missions. We have a different mission, of course, than they're not land grant. They don't have the research component. They don't have the health services that the University of Minnesota provides. But there should be as much cooperation as possible in order to make getting getting graduated as simple as possible. So when it comes to transferring and just plain overall cooperation, I think that it should be second to none, really. We the constituents here are the students and the people of the state. It's not the the individual colleges themselves. And I know they're doing a lot of cooperation. I hear reports from Minnesota State. They're very pleased with the kind of cooperation they can get now, having all of those education facilities under their purview. But it would be smart at some point in time to have an actual overview of all of our educational institutions to see what more could be done. I was in the legislature when there was talk of reducing the number of K-12 school districts in Minnesota. It was very controversial. Nothing happened immediately, but now I think on their own, about 20% have reduced. I was also in the legislature when there was the closing of state hospitals, and that was controversial, extremely controversial, and unnecessarily so in many respects. I think if you can get people to develop, take the legislative auditor looking, maybe helping assist, because they have such a reputation for being objective, and having other people looking at this issue, people that don't have an axe to grind, if you will, I think it would be smart to take an overall view of how can we provide, do a better job than we're doing now. What are the missing pieces there? Like I said, our constituents here are the students and the people of the state. We shouldn't be looking at little pockets of interest on their own. Thank you.
Okay, we've got three more questions in about 9 minutes, so this is the lightning round. Councilmember Kraus.
Congressman Luther, thank you for being here today. You mentioned in your bio coming from a dairy farm, and you understand, I know you understand the importance of agriculture in the state of Minnesota. The CFANS College on campus there is a campus within itself, right in the middle of a metro area. I went to college there 30 years ago, and I recognize everything there, but I go on Minneapolis campus, and it's unrecognizable how much growth there has been there. Referring directly to the research facilities there, we gave a tour to our farm to Speaker Paul Thiessen of the, he was a state majority leader in the legislature, and my son was a freshman at that time, and he said, the research facility you have on campus for dairy is so outdated, everything on my farm is leaps and bounds ahead technology-wise. And how are we supposed to be leaders in agriculture, having a history with Norman Borlaug and the rich agriculture heritage, if we aren't reinvesting there? What are your feelings on research facilities on the St. Paul campus and in the greater campus system?
Chairman, members, well, of course, I have had a great interest in that, even though I didn't. I did take a class on the St. Paul campus. Normally I did not. I was on the Minneapolis campus. But I've had a great interest in it because of agriculture. I actually took an ag and law class offered on the St. Paul campus because of my interest in that. And in my work since then, I've worked on agriculture and law issues as well. So I would be very supportive. Obviously, I'd need to know a lot more information than I have right now about what can be done to improve the facilities there. I think that I believe recently that there has been some gifting of facilities to the same that I heard or read to the St. Paul campus. But obviously we have to have up-to-date technology, and it's changed so much since the days that I was on the dairy farm that I would want to learn more and obviously be supportive because of my interest in agriculture and keeping in close touch with that with people in agriculture in Minnesota. Thank you.
Councilmember Carlson.
Yes, you spoke eloquently about diversity and showed us specific actions that you had done. This group has to make a tough decision tomorrow. There are 8 men on the Board of Regents right now, one of color. And if this group chooses to send forth really quality candidates who are female or people of color, will you go around the process, as you did 4 years ago, and bring your candidacies to the state legislature?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, four years ago, and I had a lot of encouragement at that time to proceed to the legislature because I had a lot of support within the legislature. I'd have to look at the results before making that decision again. That's not an easy decision to make because anytime you go to the legislature and you don't have the support of this group, they ask questions and say, why didn't this group properly reflect our thoughts over there? Why are you going around us? So I'd have to look at that carefully. I believe that I could add a lot to those kinds of issues you're talking about by serving. I know that it's important that we get minorities and we have women on the board of the region, but that's why I mentioned my track record on the issue. I'm not coming in here just saying I believe in these issues. I'm showing you that I have lived that kind of a life, and I've had that kind of a track record. And to me, that means that I would advance the cause of women and minorities and underrepresented populations if I was on the Board of Regents. And so I think that's the best case I can make to you. Thanks.
And Councilmember Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, Margaret asked my question, but I'm going to amplify it for the purposes of elaborating it for our colleagues here. 4 years ago, Congressman Senator Luther was a candidate and came through this process. He's one of seven people that have gone through this before that we're doing again. He's one of seven repeat applicants. 4 years ago, we chose to interview Congressman Bill Luther and chose not to recommend him. 4 years ago, we did not choose to interview now Regent Rocha, and therefore we did not recommend him. Regent Rocha and Congressman Luther went to the floor, not being recommended, of course, by the committees. And as luck would have it, Congressman Luther, or Bill Luther, lost 98 to 96. So he's come as close to being a regent as anybody can be. So I just wanted to give that background to you. And I would, again, ask, I guess your question answered, and I was going to ask the same question, your answer to Margaret was, if you're not recommended either by this group or by the joint committee, your answer is you don't know. You can't say you would, you can't say you wouldn't. And I'd like to make sure we understand exactly what your position is on that. Very important, I think, to us and to the process.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members, I think it is premature to come to an absolute conclusion on that. There was a different situation 4 years ago. I appreciate your comments back then, but you indicated that I'd be an excellent regent, one of the best ever, you indicated to this group, but that there were already two legislators, if I recall correctly, two legislators on, and you just felt adding a third was unnecessary, imprudent, or whatever at the time. And I know when a lot of legislators heard that, they thought, gee, I didn't know being a legislator disqualified us in that respect. But now 4 more years have gone by. It's been 16 years since I've been in Congress. It's been many more years than that since I've been in the Minnesota legislature. But I have tried to maintain my relationships over those years. So hopefully that would not be a factor this time. I've had a very broad, diverse background. And I think any time that I've spent in the legislature or in Congress would do and nothing other than enhance my ability to help the Board of Regents. I don't think it could be a detriment. And of course, Board Member Regent Sphygum and I are from different political parties, so we'd have it covered well, I think, in terms of if the administration needs us to make contacts or assistance at the legislature. So hopefully this is a different day. Thank you.
That brings us to the end of our questions. We'll turn it back to you for any closing comments or thoughts you'd like to make.
Well, thank you. I
I appreciate this so much. I know what this is like serving on these commissions, and for you to take the time that you're taking away from your regular life, I just appreciate it so much. I think by now you probably have seen the passion I have for the University of Minnesota. It's meant everything to us. It meant there was a world out there. There was a, when you grow up in the background that I had, you can't, there's no way I can tell you how much I appreciate it. I want that same opportunity for as many other families like ours as possible, from minorities, from non-traditional students, to whatever ethnic background, wherever you live in Minnesota. I want you to have the same opportunity that our family had. I have a broad cross-section of the experience. The public service is only part of it. And I'm applying, I feel, for the right reason. I don't need it for a resume. I don't need it for something to do. But I feel I want to give back. The same way I did when I went into public service, I wanted to give back. And so that's what this is about. And I think I offer what the university needs. They need a person that can bring people together, can provide leadership, teamwork. I'm a team player. They need somebody that has shown vision in the past. And I work well with people. I was trusted to serve in leadership positions in the legislature and in Washington. And I believe that that's the kind of, those are the kind of qualifications that would be right for the Board of Regents at this point in time. So I thank you very much for your time, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Congressman Luther.